My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Post Credit Podcast. I am your host, Eric Italiano, senior writer at BroBible.com. And today, as always, I am joined by my co-host, Kate Onder, who you can find writing about video games over at comicbook.com. And today we are discussing Barbenheimer, the release of Barbie and Oppenheimer, both on Friday, July 21st. One of the bigger movie events that I could think of in years. You know, I don't want to quite put it on the, like, is this the biggest movie event since No Way Home? But that's kind of how it feels, right? It has proliferated the culture to that extent. I don't think, I'm trying to, because No Way Home was the end of 2021, right?
Yeah, I would say maybe Top
the
Gun.
Batman, Top Gun. But Top Gun kind of came out of nowhere.
Built over time.
Yeah, right. Barbenheimer, as it were, has been a fan-generated event to such a successful degree that now Paramount is trying to push Saw Patrol, which is the release of...
Is that an official thing they're trying to do?
Yes, I've seen them do it online. And I apologize for spreading the word of this because I hate it that much, but I feel like it's worth pointing out how much of a success Barbenheimer has been, which I should note it has been a success because it was organic and not created by a fucking company. But Paramount is now doing Saw Patrol because Saw 10 and Paw Patrol release on the same day. So all that said, the hype leading up to these films and this day has been huge. And I think somewhat surprisingly, given the quality of filmmaker and talent involved, I think people largely expected both of these films to be good. But I think the fact that they consensus seem to be great is pretty fucking wild.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's calling Oppenheimer like a definitive masterpiece. Like, I've seen very few people say it's like, I didn't like it.
I just have a hard time wrapping my word around masterpiece where it's like, this is the guy who made The Dark Knight. Like, sure. You know, like, it is one of the defining films maybe of the last 10 years, but I'm also not sure for me it cracks my Nolan top two or three.
So how do I
marry those two things, you know?
Yeah. People are, either way, the hype is through the roof for that movie, regardless of how you feel about it. Like, everyone is definitely saying it's great, it's amazing, go see it. And then Barbie is like this tour de force where I saw children, I went at 11:30 at night. It was sold out and there were children there and like people.
Why
adults,
did you
like,
go that late? Because you couldn't get in sooner because they were.
No,
all
I just work until 10 p.m.
Okay.
I'm sure it was still packed the whole night.
Like
there were in the hallway to go see my screening, there were like three other theaters playing the movie. And that's on a Thursday night. And I mean, we can talk about the box office here or later, whatever you want to do, but it's crushing Marvel movies. What was the exact figure? Do you know? 22 million on a Thursday night preview, which is really impressive given those previews.
Comparison, Guardians 3 made 17.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like the fact that a Barbie movie is outperforming that. Because like, I think, you know, there's a stigma against Barbie that it's for girls, right? That's how your people grow up, is Barbie is for girls. But everyone is going and seeing this movie. And I think that's really impressive that this movie is having the start that it's going to have and is almost going to have over $300 million globally by the end of the weekend is what is being reported. So, I mean, it's going to be, I think it'll probably be bigger at this point because this movie is going to build momentum over the weekend. I think it's going to be, I mean, I don't want to go out on a limb here, but is this a $1 billion movie? I don't think it's out of the question.
I just wonder about its legs because I feel like everybody who is interested in seeing it is seeing it as soon as possible. So I feel like it's going to be a very front-loaded film. I think what, you know, Warner Bros. Has been a easy target for a few years now, but they need to be given credit for how much the marketing has proliferated the culture, right? So I went to see this, today's Friday. I went to see this on Wednesday night, and I caught a bus to go see it. And as I was leaving my place, I had the Barbie song in my head just because that's how my brain works. And as I was going to buy a drink at the store, I heard the Barbie song playing down the street in the real world. And then walking to the bus stop, I saw like a little boutique shop with a sign in their thing. Come on, Barb, let's go shopping. And so just the way that like the entire world seems to be participating in the event nature of it. Like I have been trying to build up my Letterboxd. And when you hit the like on that, the heart is pink. And like these are just the little things that they really have extended the tentacles of this film everywhere that they possibly can. It helps that they have two of the most beautiful and charismatic stars on earth out there giving it their all to promote the shit out of it. But just the way in which they have wisely used tie-ins and probably spent a lot of money on ads, it's worked. And there is no denying that, like, you get people like my dad, 63 or 4 year old man, being like, what's going on with Barbie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the local news has been talking about this all week. They've been talking about Oppenheimer and Barbie. And I'm like, if it's reaching the local news, that's not insignificant. You know, you're getting that out to the older audiences who don't really, you know, look online. And even the movie theaters, they have these.
You have senators making yeah. Barbenheimer jokes, which yeah. makes me want to throw myself off a bridge. But that's the fact of the matter.
Yeah. Exactly. And the movie theaters around here are doing like life-size boxes where you can like pose inside of a Barbie box and pretend to be a Barbie doll.
Yeah, my boss did that. And I, at first glance, I thought that they had made a real doll of him. I was freaked out for a second. Yeah.
So it really goes to show just how much of a reach this movie has and will probably continue to have. I want to go to Target this weekend and see what the fucking toy aisle looks like, because I'm sure it's insane. I wanted to see what Mattel's stock was, because someone was saying you guys should buy Mattel stock.
Why? Because that New Yorker piece that came out a few weeks ago saying that they've got like plans for like 20 plus films or something. Hot Wheels with JJ Abrams.
Yes.
A like what's described as an A24-esque take on Barbie with Daniel Kaluuya.
Barney.
And I think Barney. And then I think Vin Diesel is involved in Rock'em Sock'em Robots. So
okay, great.
I can't tell if you're being serious or
no, not. I am not. I didn't know that one. So yeah, stock hasn't really done much today, but I would love to see that next week and see what happens. Because like you said, yes, they have a lot of plans for movies, but I mean, you gotta imagine end of this year, the toy sales are going to be out of this world for Barbie. I mean, I guess I don't know. Like, this movie is pretty adult. Like, I was surprised.
Extremely yeah. so. But that's sort of the beauty of, you know, like the way that they break the fourth wall, the way that there are multiple, and I wouldn't even call them like sexual innuendos, because that would imply that they're being sort of snuck in. They're just full blown sex jokes.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's why Greta Gerwig, both because it works in terms of the tone of the film, but I think that that's why Gerwig went for such an aggressively dollhouse, or what you called a lazy town esque look, because that is what's going to occupy the kids for most of the time are the sight and the sounds. It's certainly not the content of the film, which is about like gender roles and self-discovery and purpose. And so the ingenuity of turning this sort of IP into this kind of story is like borderline genius.
Yes. And goes to show, like, I mean, Mattel is heavily involved with this movie, right? And they're literally like calling out the, I don't know if Mattel's CEO in real life is a man or not, but like, that this movie definitely like kind of like targets those kinds of people. And
yes, but I don't. But do you think making jokes about most boardrooms being all white men is a particularly brave swing?
No, it's not. But it, I feel like it, when you're have control over the movie, you can tell someone don't do that. Like,
yeah, which I'm curious, because there was in that report, Mattel execs apparently flew out to the set of the film to speak with Gerwig about a line that they didn't think represented the brand. Like, I'm so curious now, considering that the corporation itself vaguely played the villains of the plot. I'm so curious to know what that line could have been.
Yeah. Do you know if they cut it?
No, I don't know.
Interesting. Maybe she got her way. I don't know. Yeah, their CEO is a man. So, I mean, like, it's not a big deal, but like, it's just, they got away with something, I think, by Mattel backing this movie in such a prominent way and letting them, you know, not only just got to fund this movie and then they got to go make a Barbie movie, but they could also, like you said, make a movie with some like real depth, real themes. And sometimes I think they would have been better off just looking down the fucking camera and just saying what they want to say, because it's not, I don't know if they handle all of the way they want to divulge that information in the best way. I think there could have been a little bit more, less heavy handedness. I mean, it is the heaviest hand. It is not text. It is not subtext. It is text.
I'm on the same page with that. I don't know if the sentimentality of the third act works for me. And that's not because basically men are propped up as both the bad guys and punchline, because frankly, I think both of those things are largely true.
Sure.
And I thought it was super funny, the whole Ken discovering what the world thinks manliness actually is, was really, really funny. So all that shit worked for me. But I didn't think the sentimentality of it, i.e. Barbie's personal journey or the journey of the mom and daughter, worked, because as you say, they lay it on thick, right? But the first hour of the film is, look how fucking ridiculous this all is. So for them to take that hard 180 into like having Barbie and the creator of Barbie meet in like the heaven version of King's Cross Station to like discuss what she means to women around the world and what her purpose was, it felt like having that storyline in there just to tick it off and not so much as like consistent with what the first hour was, which I really enjoyed. That said, given the quality of the filmmaker and talent involved in telling that story, I was still largely on board with it. But for me, I had much more fun when it was just a hard comedy, which it was a lot of the time, laugh out loud funny.
Yes, and it is still funny in that second half, but it is, like you said, a hard turn, like on a dime. And it goes from, I think, in the first half being subtle isn't the right word, but a lot less direct about what it's trying to say. And then completely, like I said, would have been better off just looking down the barrel of the camera and speaking the lines into it just to say what you want to say. I mean, a lot of buzzwords. And again, this is not me being like, I don't like this movie, hate it on me as a man. It's just like, there is a way to write, I think, the things you're trying to write without being like beating you over the head with the biggest hammer in the world over it. And I found that just kind of like, it feels... lazy isn't the right word either, but like
derivative.
I think so. It doesn't feel like you're able to weave your message into the context of the movie without having to, you know, just spill out.
Like I think it would have worked better if the way that they attached Barbie's emotional well-being to a human had they done that with Ken and shown like a real world man going through some sense of like struggle and plight, then maybe the emotional journey of those two together is more of a, I don't want to say it's not thoughtful, because the entire thing I think it's borderline genius, but the delicacy in which they're, as you say, they're trying to make their points in the third act just sort of feels like they're putting Ken on the cross almost. You know what I mean? Like the poor guy is literally just used as an avatar for sort of all of men's failures, even though he's positioned as being both a joke and sympathetic. So you're confused. You're like, am I supposed to feel bad and relate to this guy, or is he the villain? And I think that that gets muddled into not just the character of Ken, but the movie's message about the patriarchy as a whole.
I agree, because like you said, I feel like they split it two ways, where they make Ken very likable and very easy to relate to in some capacity, but then they're like, he's literally taking over the world like a January 6th like, right. you know, Capital yeah. Raider. I'm like, yeah. okay, well, I don't know how to feel about that. And it's just kind of...
Because he's literally lost, right? His whole purpose, he says his job is beach. His job is not beach. His job is Barbie. And yes. so, and that is why I get a little confused. It's because it's like, at the end of this day, this character was created to serve her.
Yes. But I do like the message at the end that it's kind of like everyone needs to find themselves.
You yeah, like finding your own version of what being yes. a man or a woman or XYZ is.
I think that message is strong, whereas the gender roles stuff gets a little bit more murky. And I do wonder how much that comes down to maybe the studio playing a hand and being like, maybe tone that stuff down or move right. some things around or whatever. Right. Because
like Michael Jordan once famously said, Republicans buy shoes too. I'm yes. sure it was the same thing with them, with men and tickets, right?
Yes, exactly. So it really comes down to, you know, everyone can get behind the message of finding yourself and whatnot and learning who you need to be. But it's a little harder, I think, for some people to get behind the idea that women can be president and stuff like that. You know, so
yeah, like I feel like if you're uncomfortable with the word patriarchy being thrown at you a lot, that's a you thing.
Yes. Like, I really didn't hear it. Like, I think who was it? Ben Shapiro said it's like 10 times. I'm like, you're keeping track of how yeah, you started yeah. counting. Like, okay, yeah. buddy.
And it's also largely funny.
It is
like,
funny.
It's a comedic effect when he says, yeah, when I found out that patriarchy, I don't know the exact line, but he was like, I thought it was just mainly about horses and it's not. And that's what now I'm out. Like, how can you be mad about that?
I think they even kind of lean into this idea. Like when Barbie is talking to Ruth at the end, she's like, patriarchy is like a made up concept. Like they're not out here preaching to you that way necessarily, like, and they're not trying to downplay it either, but there is like a more like nuanced idea there where this movie isn't trying to be anti-men, which is the sentiment I've seen passed around. Right. I'm like, it's trying to be, because the movie starts as Barbie's rule the world, and then the second half is Ken's rule the world, and everyone starts to realize neither of those are really working for everybody, right?
Exactly.
They have to realize everyone can work together, coexist, be beautiful together. And yeah. that is the overall message. It's not one is better than the other. It's trying to empower everyone and elevate everyone to the same level, which is somehow going over people's heads. I can't expect that to not happen to a failed screenwriter, but that's, you know, neither right. here nor there.
all right. I think that's a good place to move on. Let's talk about the leads. Robbie. I love that they had a fourth wall joke about it, because she is, it's distracting in this movie. Yes. And this is a spoiler warning for Barbie. Spoiler warning, spoiler warning, spoiler warning. There's a literal joke in this film where they're trying to make a point where like Barbie is like, when the Ken take over Kenland, Barbie like loses her like magical lust, right? And like mm-hmm. the makeup fades away. And she yes. says something like, I'm no longer beautiful. And Helen Mirren's voice pops in and is like, note, if you want to make this point, do not cast Margot Robbie. And it's true, dude. I don't think I've ever seen somebody look that good on screen. I don't yeah, know who else. I don't like the idea that this project was originally built around Amy Schumer is not only insane because of who Amy Schumer is, but like Jennifer Lawrence, I don't think she could pull this off. Anne Hathaway, like I'm just trying to think of like 30-year-old A-listers, right? Ana de Armas. I don't think any of these women could have pulled this off, not only because Margot Robbie has that almost otherworldly manufactured beauty to her, wherein it's like, you don't look real, but her dramatic chops, her ability to sell emotion with just her face, I found some of the most effective, whereas like Ryan Gosling was effective for laughs, right? The best stuff that I thought Robbie did as Barbie was the emotional scenes.
Yes, she's able to really portray a sense of humanity in a doll, which I think is really impressive. And she can do the doll stuff very well, but she brings another level of depth when she gets a taste of what the world is like.
And to split that balance of being like clueless, but not stupid.
Yes. It's there's a level of ditziness, but awareness of what matters, what she needs to go through, what she needs to learn. Because, you know, at the beginning, she's offered this choice in quotations of stay in Barbie land and be ignorant to everything or go in the real world.
By the way, Kate McKinnon was unbelievable.
Hilarious. There's a moment where there's like a jump scare where I think Barbie's like unconscious and Kate McKinnon's face jumps up and then it hard cuts to the Barbie, ugly Barbie doll's face. I literally spit laughing. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, she's really good in this.
But yeah, like Margot Robbie, like you said, it's hard to imagine Amy Schumer in this role because one, I don't think she, from everything she has done, has the nuance and depth. She's very like ham-fisted jokes, yep. I think. And yep. I think the overall message of the movie, I can see that being something that she would work with, but would not have the level of depth that Margot Robbie can give to it. Someone, and I think Amy Schumer just comes across as very unlikable. I'm really just shitting on someone right now. I'm so sorry. But she comes across as unlikable. Well, Margot Robbie is immediately charismatic. When you see her wake up out of bed and doing all of her fun little things, you're like, I love this. This is so cute. I love this. And I mean, you really feel for her and her sense of depowerment, I guess, in the middle of the movie. And you want to see her find her place in this world, and at the end she does.
And there's also a level of physical performance here that we know that she has. We've seen it in The Wolf of Wall Street, we've seen it in Babylon, we've seen it in the DCEU. She could be a very physical performer, but here it's used for comedic effect. One of the biggest laughs I got when she just kind of like collapsed on the ground and then went stiff and was just kind of laying around like
a Barbie doll.
Yeah, exactly. So all those little details work for me. The way in which the characters talk and move and think as if they're being controlled by kids, I thought was so goddamn smart. How they explained at the start, they were like, Barbies don't walk. They just get placed places. And so like all that shit really worked for me. And then Gosling.
Yeah.
I put out a tweet, an Oscar nom feels like a stretch because this just doesn't seem like the type of performance that the Academy goes for. But if you're measuring a performance in entertainment value, it's difficult to think of somebody being better than this year. This guy, literally every facial tick or time he opens his mouth can crack you up. It is unbelievable.
He does not waste a fraction of a second when he's on screen. I mean, everything down to when they're at the dance party at the beginning of the movie and he's sitting in the corner just looking kind of like pissed off. And then he comes like dancing in and he has this facial expression. I can't describe it, but I laughed so loud and no one else was really laughing.
You've got to like really key in on some of the little facial expressions that he does. Yeah.
And I think if you have an awareness of guys and comedic background, whether it be with him and the Nice Guys or doing stuff on like Saturday Night Live or whatever, like he's really fucking funny. Like he knows how to be funny. And there's another line towards the end of the movie where Barbie goes and is like, yes, I'll be your girlfriend. And he says, excuse me. And he walks away and he screams, sublime. Well, I'm going to say that for the rest of my life. That is one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in my life.
What's great is it's not even on camera. No, you just hear him. You just hear him.
And it's just every little thing he does, from even like the last shot we see of him is him wearing a sweater that says, I am Kenuff. And he's going down a slide and says, Ken is me. I mean, all of these things are going to become instant memes, like Ryan Gosling is me type of stuff. Boys Night is gonna be every night. Like
he's so funny, good, man. He is so good.
And to your point of...
And when they both run up to each other and they're like, I figured it out. And he's like, men rule the world.
It's so good. It's just amazing.
Or when he's trying to go get a job. And she's like, I'm not going to let you do one lobotomy or something like that. He's like, but I'm a man.
Let me talk to a doctor. And then he goes over to a male. He's like, you're an actual doctor. It's so fucking funny.
Oh, yeah. That shit is so fucking funny.
What you were saying earlier about like Barbies and stuff talk like and walk like and whatever, like kids or whatever. The way he talks is very childlike, where he says, my job is beach or right? It's like, that's something like a kid would say because they don't.
Or no, the idea that he doesn't know what sex is.
Yeah, I think they go talk.
Can I stay overnight? Why? Because I'm your boyfriend. To do what? I'm not really sure, actually.
he goes over to those construction workers, and Barbie's like, I don't have a vagina, and he doesn't have a penis. And I think when they're walking away, he says something like, I have every genital or something. I don't know if that's what he said quite, but I'm pretty sure it's what he said. And I was like, yeah, sure, man. I buy it. 2023.
Oh, shit. That's so good. All right. So a 100 million plus domestic opening surely means that they're going to try to make more if they could get those three being Robbie, Gosling, and Gerwig back, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, the movie ends in a way that I'm like, I don't know how you do that, because she's in the real world going to see her gynecologist. So I don't
have to go back to save Barbieland or something. Yeah,
make that happen. Yeah, I just
don't know how. Like, you know that these suits are like, all right, let's cook up the next one.
I mean, especially if this movie does come close to making $1 billion, which again, I don't think is out of the question. It all depends on legs, but. I mean, there's not super stiff competition in the coming weeks. Oppenheimer right now, obviously, but that does have a different kind of demographic. And then the Ninja Turtles movie in a few weeks. But other than that, I mean, like, this movie could really clean up the rest of the summer.
Challengers.
Yes, yes. So there's a lot of, I mean, there's probably going to be a lack of movies this fall if that keeps up.
What else is there? Blue Beetle coming out. Yeah,
it's not going to do anything.
So, this has got space to cook for sure.
Absolutely. I do want to see a Ken sequel. I think there is, or like a spinoff. I think there's totally room for that. Like you said, I do think Ryan Gosling gives a performance worthy of awards. But like you said, I don't think the awards shows will go for it. But I would love to see him back in this role. For the rest of my life.
Yeah,
like, he's the funniest fucking person I've ever seen in my life. This is genuinely the funniest movie I've seen in probably years in a theater. Like, I've not laughed as hard. Like, genuine belly laugh in the theater since maybe like Game Night.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then I just want to touch on Greta Gerwig's next thing, going to Netflix to do the Narnia films. I understand that she said that she wants to be like a Chris Nolan type filmmaker, but I'm just so uninspired by that.
We have any idea of what the plot is or anything like that?
Well, they're like based on books. They're like fantasy books.
Okay.
I'm not thrilled about that. I love the idea of her being like a blockbuster large scale filmmaker, but the Narnia saga is not where I would like to see her go. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about Oppenheimer. All right, we are back. We are discussing Oppenheimer. Now, I have already seen it. Cade has not, because he is flying all the way out to New York City to see it in 70mm IMAX. So in light of that, I am just going to splice in a video review that I posted on YouTube and TikTok. It's about 3 minutes long. That will serve as my general thoughts and review of the film. And then after that, Kate and I will just discuss anything further or any questions he might have. All right, folks. Last night, I went to a 70mm screening of Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, and the movie left me absolutely floored. The best way that I could describe it is that Oppenheimer is basically the Social Network of World War II films. Nolan uses every technical tool in his bag, from writing to cinematography to his rare ability to wrangle A-list stars, to create perhaps the most important and definitive biopic since David Fincher's film over 10 years ago. Ultimately, the film is a stunning moral tale that asks, what have we done to ourselves and when are we going to stop? Now, each act of the film has a very clearly defined story that it follows. The first act is about Oppenheimer's personality and his young life. The second act is about the making of Los Alamos, the recruitment of scientists, and the Trinity test. And the third act is then the fallout from the U.S. government using the atom bombs on Japan. Now, while it's an immaculate story, I did find myself rubbing up against the pace and propulsion of the plot at times, particularly in the second act when the Germans give up World War II, which therefore removes the sort of space race movie element that this film had. Amazingly, though, Nolan circles the wagons in the third act as he examines the decay of Oppenheimer's psyche as a result of his overwhelming guilt and the political machinations working against him in order to silence him and his opinions of atomic bombing. The third act was my favorite part. I thought it was the best part of the film. It is likely the part of the film that is going to get the actors in this nominated for Academy Awards. And it is the part that's going to be circling in my head for days and weeks to come. It's where Nolan truly hammers home his thematic message of humanity not only being the biggest threat to ourselves, but that we always almost realize it when it's far too late. The final few moments in particular, in typical Nolan fashion, is bravura stuff. Now, a few random notes. While I don't think it's quite in the tier of The Dark Knight and Interstellar, and for me, The Prestige, I think it's in that next tier along with the likes of Inception and Batman Begins. I think that Robert Downey Jr. is the most likely Oscar winner of all the performances in the Best Supporting Actor category. The score from Ludwig Göransson is A1. It is fantastic, and that will probably also score a nomination as well. Christopher Nolan and Cillian Murphy are both sublime in how they get you to constantly waver on Oppenheimer's morality. And finally, I think this film is going to rack up a bunch of Oscar nominations, a bunch of below the line stuff like sound and editing, but also Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for Cillian Murphy, Best Supporting Actor for Robert Downey Jr., and Best Supporting Actress for Emily Blunt. All right, Oppenheimer hits theaters in just a few days. Are you more excited for this or Barbie? Let us know in the comments. All right, so those are my general thoughts about Oppenheimer. I think that this movie is going to be talked about, and like when we talk about this being a masterpiece, I think we need a better definition of what exactly that word means. But like, I think that this will be a film that's talked about in 5 or 10 years. And I think what I was most impressed by was how I went into it not really knowing much about Oppenheimer, but largely just assuming that given the project that he was involved in, given the actor that they chose to play him, who generally has a villainous aura to him, I just went into it assuming that I was going to not like him and walk away from this film, you know, ruining the day that he was born. And I felt the opposite of that. I thought Cillian makes this guy remarkably human. I left the theater actually feeling bad for the dude. Like, because at every turn, I think he is doing what he believes to be the right thing. And that the reason he has the reputation that he does, whatever that reputation might be, is more a result of the political factors around him than his actual quality of character.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, having not seen the movie, that it's a lot of someone who is a big believer in science, right? And when science is used and wielded for political purposes, what happens? You know, it's like, this is a man who's capable of doing very miraculous and important things, but that is in turn being manipulated by the powers that be to do less than savory things. I mean, you know, you can, whether good or bad, the nuclear bomb is a miracle. Like, the way that that thing even exists is like, that is mind-meltingly like crazy that something like that is possible. And the fact that a human being could produce something like that is crazy. And then the question then becomes is, well, is it good or bad? And I mean, I think most people would probably agree that it's a bad thing. Yeah. I mean, we had a period literally called the Cold War where there was just constant threats from all sides that we're going to drop the bomb. We're going to do it. We're going to drop the bomb.
You saw that. There's a great line in the film that it says, like, the nuke bombing was not the last move in World War II, but the first move of the Cold War.
That's cool as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Someone, I was watching an interview with Christopher Nolan, and one of the interviewers was saying, like, you know, it's not so much about, like what you said, kind of right now, it's about what this thing will mean in the future. And here we are, 2023. I mean, Nolan started writing this movie before all the stuff with Russia and stuff, but I mean, it's, could not be more well timed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that threat has loomed over us since the creation of the atom bomb. And yes, I fully believe that you would come out the other side feeling bad for a guy like that, because, you know, from just the surface level knowledge I do have of him, it sounds like he's just someone who's a really smart person, and maybe his, you know, his gift of knowledge is also a curse, you know, in some capacity.
Yeah. Well, and they make, and they hammer home the point that he was, above all else, a theorist.
Yeah.
He was a scientific theorist. So like, he had no hands-on skill really whatsoever. Sure. So at the end of the day, while yes, he was doing it for the US government, he was simply scientifically theorizing about what a atom bomb could be. And when you present that in the context of, well, we do it first or the Germans do, yeah, how do you not side with him in that case? So, yeah, I mean, the third act, I think, is where a lot of people seem to be splitting. I think that that is sort of the litmus test of if you know ball or not. I you know, like, I've seen some complaints that the third act is too talky, that there's too much courtroom scenes. To me, the third act, I like held my breath the entire time. It's like a symphony of writing and directing and editing and acting.
Well, I mean, I'm sure other people have mentioned this already, but like, some of Christopher Nolan's best work are scenes where two characters, I mean, I'm sure there's more than two characters in these scenes, talking in a room. I mean, you think of the Batman Joker interrogation, that's just right, two people talking in a fucking room. So, I mean, you could also say his weaker points in some of his movies are the action. Like, you look at the Batman movies,
right,
I mean, it is pretty bad at times. And he's grown with, like, Inception and Tenet and stuff. But, like, this is a guy that, when he started, his claim to fame was making movies where characters largely just talk for the most part. That's where he excels. He's a great writer and always has been. And so I really am excited to see. And he's a master of using, I know he doesn't edit these movies himself, but he knows how to pace and cut a movie so that every second is electric. And I fully believe that he would use every second of the 3 hours to create a sense of momentum and propulsion that would keep you on the edge of your seat. I mean, like, I've seen people say, I don't get on the edge of my seat. I was on the edge of my seat for this movie, which is crazy to think about for a movie that, as we know, is just people talking and is historic, like one of the most well-documented events in history, right? Like, we know all of the facts surrounding this for the most part. So the idea that you're in suspense over something that you know the outcome of is pretty fucking impressive.
Well, that's what Nolan is smart about, because he uses the black and white courtroom scenes. That is stuff that people largely don't know. And so he uses that to build tension towards the end. And what largely serves as the dramatic thrust once the Germans give up World War II, right? Because that ends the sort of space race film propulsion that it had, but then this plot line takes over. And I actually, like, the first 2 hours I was like, okay, you know, this is really good stuff, but then that third hour, to me, it kicked into fucking overdrive. And that is the hour that made the Social Network comps hammer home for me, because he's weaving in, I think, three different timelines bouncing back and forth, but sort of telling the same, like, overarching story, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
All the while using Einstein as his MacGuffin sort of Nolan twist thing that he can't resist, but this isn't like a Tenet type twist, you know, but it's just that classic Nolan of, he leaves you wanting to know something until the way end, and he drops like a fucking hammer. And he does it with Einstein, which I think is particularly brilliant, because he is like a human MacGuffin, right? He has an orbit and a gravity unto himself. My girlfriend very smartly said that, like, it was almost weird seeing him on screen, because he has such a mythological figure that imagining him as like a regular guy is startling.
Yeah.
So Nolan knows that. And I know that there were jokes of him being used as like a post-credit MCU type character, but honestly, it's not far away from that, but it fucking works incredibly. I can't wait for you to see it so you have a better idea of what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand. Like, I would have never have made that leap that your girlfriend made about that mythological sense. Because, like, I have felt every time I have seen him in the trailer be like, hey, there's something weird about Albert Einstein in this, not necessarily in this MCU context, like you said, but, like, I'm like, what is it that is so weird about me seeing this? And it's like, I think it'd be like seeing Martin Luther King Jr. or something in a movie, like something like that. Yeah. You know, he's been in movies, but.
And then so Nolan uses his weight to hinge the third act on.
That's a ballsy man right there.
Yeah. I've been thinking about the third act since I saw it on Tuesday. And honestly, you know me, I don't go to the theater outside of screenings for my job a lot. I'm thinking about doing it for this because it is just rattling around in my head nonstop.
I can't wait.
You're seeing it a week from today, right?
Correct. And it's a hard wait. And
I thought we agreed though that you were going to just see it twice.
I thought about it, and then I was like, my friend who's going is like, I'm not seeing it till you get here. So I was like, I can't do that to you. Yeah, I'd be fucked up. So and I looked at showings last night to be like, should I just go? And
you're gonna have that thought every single night until Friday.
I know. And every night this weekend is sold out in IMAX, and I'm not seeing it in anything less than IMAX. So I'm just considering it completely off the table. Which is again fine by me. If the first way I have to see it is the way I'm paying a lot of money to go see it, then that's fine.
All right, I think that will conclude our Barbenheimer discussion. Make sure to follow Cade at Cade_Onder and all of his fantastic work at comicbook.com. Follow myself at Eric_Ital and all my work at Bro Bible. Please also follow at PostgredPod on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. I'm trying to build up those latter two platforms. Join us. So you're not seeing it until next Friday. So
Thursday.
Next Thursday. Still, we're not going to be able to get your thoughts. And I don't think Brandon's seen it for a while either. So all right. So that will probably cover. That's probably going to cover our Oppenheimer discussion for now. If Brandon maybe sees it before next weekend, we'll dive a bit deeper into it. Unfortunately, Secret Invasion ends next week. I haven't watched since week two, but I guess we'll see how that goes as well. But otherwise, we will talk to you guys next week. All right, y'all.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.